I'd like to bring the House Committee on Consumer Protection to order. It's Wednesday, May 27th.
Certainly is.
Sorry for the late start. The other committee was a little late getting out. And committee, today we have four bills up. We're going to start out with Senate Bill 386A, and then we will move on to Senate Bill 515A, then to 731A, and last will be 973A. So with that, I would like to open a work session on Senate Bill 386A. Representative Riley.
I move Senate Bill 386A without recommendations to passage to the Committee on Rules by prior reference.
Representative Riley moves Senate Bill 386A without recommendation as to passage to the Committee on Rules by prior reference. Is there discussion? Seeing no discussion. Have a roll call vote, please. And could we go by reverse alphabetical order today?
Representative Ware?
Aye.
Representative May?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
No.
Representative Gilliam?
No.
Representative Cowan?
Aye.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Vice Chair Widener?
No.
Vice Chair Riley?
No.
Chair Holby?
Aye. Senate Bill 386A, having received required votes, is moved to the House Committee on Rules without recommendation. Close the work session on Senate Bill 386A and open a work session on Senate Bill 515A. Victoria, I neglected to ask you last time, but would you give us a summary of 515A and the amendments that we adopted at our last meeting?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 515A extends time period available for consumer remedy for vehicle that does not conform to manufacturer's warranty, grants manufacturer, manufacturer's agent, or authorized dealer at least three attempts to repair or correct nonconformity during the earlier of the two-year period after delivery of vehicle, or date mileage reaches 24,000 miles, or if motor vehicle is out of service at least 30 days, or motor home is out of service at least 60 days due to repair or correction. Grants manufacturer, agent, or dealer, or manufacturer at least one attempt to repair or correct nonconformity if nonconformity is likely to cause death or serious bodily injury, specifies calculations for reasonable allowance for use of motor vehicle, motorcycle, or motor home by consumer when consumer returns vehicle to manufacturer, makes decision resulting from informal dispute settlement binding on manufacturer but not on consumer, allows award of attorney fees, expert witness fees, and costs to prevailing consumer, allows award of attorney fees to manufacturer if court finds consumer brought action in bad faith or for purposes of harassment, clarifies refundable charges and procedures for return of aftermarket items, requires manufacturer to request title inscription identifying vehicle subject to provisions of measure, requires disclosure of manufacturer buyback of non-conforming vehicle in future sale, lease, or transfer, makes failure to disclose an unlawful trade practice, grants director of Department of Transportation certain rulemaking authority, defines collateral charge, declares an emergency effective on passage. The committee has already adopted the A11, A12, and A13 amendments. The A11s streamline the mileage allowance deduction for service calls by replacing a requirement for odometer readings with an allowance of 10 miles per visit for test drives and specifies that non-dealer installed aftermarket additions may be used as an affirmative defense. The A12s added collateral charges to reasonable allowance for use calculation. The A13s incorporated portions of the Model RV Lemon Law that define living facility components as being not covered, allowed the manufacturer an additional attempt to repair after the three dealer attempts, and awards attorney fees to the prevailing party in RV cases.
Thank you. For that committee, we did hear this bill out pretty much. We did hear the 11s, 12s, and 13s, which the committee adopted without objection. And somebody was here to speak for Mr. Brenneman, but I see that he's here now. I don't know if you care to say anything about the dash 13s.
If you'd like, I can go either way. I had a funeral Friday and couldn't make it.
Well, you have no objection to them, I assume.
No objection.
I guess we don't need you to say anything on the record then. Representative Riley.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 515 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Riley moves Senate Bill 515A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick comment that to me, this is how consumer protection should work. I want to compliment the chair working so closely with our counterpart in the Senate who has worked hard on this. When you see divergent points of view coming together and you can work out amendments and put together something like this, I think it's extraordinary, and I just wanted to say that. There was one other person that I was hoping could be here today to comment. Is Ralph Groner in the room anywhere? But other than that, I'm all for it, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I feel I always operate that way, so thank you.
Been that way all year. Where you been?
So with that, could I have a roll call vote, Cindy?
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Representative Allen?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Representative Winger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Widener?
Aye.
Vice Chair Riley?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Aye. Senate Bill 515A, having received the required votes, has passed the floor with a due pass recommendation. Carrier?
Okay.
Representative Matthews? We'll carry the bill. With that, I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 515A. And open a work session on Senate Bill 731A. Victoria, would you please give us a brief summary of Senate Bill 731A?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 731A protects amount in garnishee's financial account that is equal to the lesser of the amount of certain direct deposit or electronic transfer exempt funds deposited in calendar month preceding delivery of writ of garnishment or total balance in account. Specifies funds exempt from garnishment, specifies that protection applies when financial institutions can readily identify qualifying exempt funds or when account holder formally identifies qualifying exempt funds. Specifies first in, first out as accounting method to be used when identifying exempt funds. Prohibits financial institution from charging processing fee if debtor's deposited funds are not subject to garnishment. Increases garnishment search fee paid to financial institution from $10 to $15. Exempts Department of Revenue from search fee increases. Releases financial institution from liability if institution acts in good faith when determining whether funds are subject to garnishment. This bill passed the Consumer Protection and Public Affairs Committee in the Senate 5-0. Passed the Senate 30-0. You should have -A9s. -A10s and -A11s in front of you. The A9s eliminate the provisions allowing the account holder to submit an affidavit regarding anticipated exempt fund deposits. The A10s specify that information regarding exempt fund deposits arrive with the payment, replacing the phrase or can readily be identified by you. The -A11s specify that information arrived from the payer, replace or can readily be identified by you. So the difference between the A10s and the A11s is that the A10s specify that the information has to arrive with the payment, while the A11s specify that it may arrive separately but from the payor.
Thank you, and I'd sure like to recognize that we do have the A9s on the table in front of us for the record, and as well as the A10s and the A11s. It's my understanding the A11s are a compromise between the credit unions and the advocacy of the Law Center, and I'd entertain the motion on the A11s.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Riley.
I move the -A11s to Senate Bill 731.
Representative Riley moves the -11 amendments be adopted to Senate Bill 731A. Discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Matthews.
I'd just like to comment on
the Dash 11s haven't been a collaborative effort. I think it's a good move on all parties involved. I know that perhaps the banks wanted the Dash 9, but the credit unions, and nowhere in their testimony did I hear them say that they were against the legislation. They were just looking for the tools to do this properly. And quite honestly, I think they pride themselves on looking after the little guy. I myself am a member of the credit union. I think it's a good personal feeling to walk in the door. So I'm glad to see that both parties or all parties could get together on it. And so the Dash 11s, it's a good effort. Thank you.
Thank you. Other discussion? Cindy, could I have a roll call vote, please, in reverse alphabetical order?
Starting with the middle.
Come and push it a bit. Yes.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative Cowan?
Aye.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wagner?
Aye.
Vice Chair Riley?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Aye. The Dash 11 amendments to Senate Bill 731, having received required votes, is adopted. Representative Riley.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 731A as amended to the floor with due pass recommendation.
Representative Riley moves Senate Bill 731A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Seeing none, Cindy, can we have the roll call vote in reverse alphabetical order?
Representative Wagner? Aye. Representative Tomei? Aye. Representative Matthews? Aye. Representative Krieger? Aye. Representative Gilliam? Aye. Representative Cowan? Aye. Representative Barton? Aye. Vice Chair Wagner? Aye. Vice Chair Riley? Aye. Chair Holby? Aye. Mr. Chair, point of order. Just for insurance. You didn't leave an amendment dangling, correct? Because I don't want you to have this come back.
Senate Bill 731A, having received the required votes, is declared passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Can I have a carrier, please?
Representative Gilliam?
No. Chair will carry the bill. I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 731A. And open a work session on Senate Bill 973A.
I think I cleared that one up. I think Representative
Victoria, will you please give us a brief summary of Senate Bill 973A?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Senate Bill 973A revises life settlement insurance regulations, prohibits stranger-originated life insurance practice or plan, defines parameters and reporting requirements for life settlement providers, brokers, producers, and agents, requires specified disclosure to policy owner at the time of contract signing and to life settlement purchasers, prohibits life settlement contracts for 5 years after the issuance of policy with exceptions, prohibits certain solicitations and ads, regulations, and restrictions on advertising of life settlement contracts and related products, grants DCBS rulemaking authority, makes violation of life settlement contracts act an unlawful trade practice, prohibits persons convicted of felony involving dishonesty or breach of trust from engaging in business of life settlements, requires persons engaged in life settlement business to inform DCBS of suspected fraud.
Yeah, you want to give us a brief summary of, we have a couple of amendments going back to the A7s,
right.
A10s.
You have before, should have before you the Dash A7s, Dash A10s, Dash A12s, and Dash A11s. The Dash A7s contain generalized disclosures without straying into compelled speech issues. The Dash 10s combine the disclosure piece with changes proposed by DCBS to extend rescission period and clarify private right of action. The Dash A12s expand the disclosure provision to the point that legislative council believes they may raise constitutional issues, and the A11s combine the provisions of the A10s and the A12s, which also exposes them to the same issues, constitutional issues.
Thank you. That.
Sorry, Mr. Chair.
Representative Barton.
I'm sorry, Victoria. Can you? Could you read that one more time, please?
All of it?
No, specifically respect to the constitutional issues and the difference. Did you say there was a difference in the constitutional issues between the 7 and the 11
Barton,
vote?
We have legislative counsel here.
Ah, I would love to hear.
So I had anticipated a discussion perhaps on that. But before that, I think I would like to take a motion on the Dash 10 bill so we can open up the discussion.
Mr. Chair.
Dash 10 bill.
I move the Dash 10 amendment to Senate Bill 973A.
Representative Riley moves the Dash 10 amendment to Senate Bill 973A. Now discussion. Representative Barton, I think that maybe we could have legislative counsel come up and address some of the other issues. I believe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
If I could have Mr. Howard Gordon, Mr. Howard, come up.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Widener.
Would it be all right if I moved the A11s as well, so we could hear about both of them?
Not at this time. State your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Chair Holvey. I'm Gordon Howard with the Office of Legislative Counsel. The question regarding the constitutionality issues with this bill have to do with the proposed new Section 22 in the A7 and A12 amendments. And the issue has to do with the First Amendment to the United States Constitution regarding free speech, and also Article 1, Section 8 of the Oregon Constitution. And the issue specifically is one of what's called compelled speech, where a person is required by government law or order to disseminate a message or opinion with which that person disagrees.
And Mr. Howard, before you go on, I just want to ask a particular question about the A10 amendments, which we're currently considering. Do you see any constitutional issues with the A10 amendments?
No, I do not.
And the A10 amendments, I believe, Victoria, if I'm correct, also have the fix of the required by DCBS, as well as a couple other pieces out of the Dash 7s.
That's correct.
And so I would think that we might take that into consideration when he's talking about the constitutionality of something. I want to have him just talk specifically about the constitutionality of a specific amendment, and just so that we're clear that he's not talking about all of them. So I just wanted to clarify that. So so we'll move on then to the, I guess it was the Dash 11 and 12 that Victoria had mentioned that you had flagged.
Yes. As I said, the issue is one of compelled speech. The leading case in this situation is from the U.S. Supreme Court. It's Pacific Gas and Electric versus the PUC of California. And that ruled, the Supreme Court in 1986 ruled that a utility in that case could not be required to include in its bills a flyer from a consumer advocacy group which opposed that utility's rates and policies. In terms of the First Amendment jurisprudence, there is an exception to the that allows government to restrict commercial speech when the regulation is concerning misleading or unlawful speech, and that's basically consumer protection type of provisions. Looking at the Oregon Constitution, I should point out that the Oregon Constitution, as it's interpreted by our Supreme Court, makes no distinction between commercial and non-commercial speech, but also does have the exception, what's called the historical exception, for things like misleading or fraudulent advertising, which can be regulated. And the key is whether, in that case, is whether the regulation is related to a historical exception for free speech rights, and certainly prevention of misleading practices is arguably such an exception. There isn't a direct case in Oregon law on that. There are examples of that in our statutes, for instance, landlord-tenant disclosures, banker-depositor disclosures, and actually disclosures in the existing life settlement insurance regulations that are already in there. Looking at the, both the dash 7 and then on the one hand and then the dash 11 and 12 amendments relating to this section 22, the dash 7 amendments as written would seem to fall within the exception for consumer protection against false and misleading advertising. They don't require, in looking at them, specific mention of life settlement insurance by life insurers. The issue is, should a life insurer be required to inform an individual about a competing product with which they don't agree? Whereas the dash 11 and 12 amendments, section 22, do include a specific reference to life settlement insurance as being required for disclosure. If it doesn't mention the specific competitor, then it would not seem to run afoul of the Pacific Gas and Electric California case that the Supreme Court decided. And so that really summarizes my analysis of that situation.
So before you go any further, and I open it up to questions, just so I'm clear, your opinion then is that the dash and 11 and 12 have a problem with constitutionality, but the dash 7s do not.
That's correct. And the dash 11s and 12s add a specific reference requiring the life insurance companies to provide disclosure about the options, specifically of life settlement insurance. And that is where the question really arises as to whether that runs afoul of that Pacific Gas and Electric case.
Thank you. Representative Barton, a question?
I'm going to pass for now, Mr. Chair. I'd like to come back in a second.
Other questions? You know, while Representative Barton is thinking about that, I, from my perspective, I'll ask Mr. Howard again another question. It's the Chair's intent to pass the dash 10s, but it would not preclude us from passing the dash 7. It would not be in conflict with the 10 if the committee chose to do that, is it?
That's correct. The there's some redundant provisions in the two, but there are no conflicting provisions.
So, committee, at this time, I'd like to go ahead and take the vote on the dash 10 amendments that are on the table. Is there discussion about the dash 10?
Mr. Chair, they contain the 8s.
The 10s, did they contain the 8s? So I'll have to refer to my committee administrator. My memory's not that good.
Yes.
The 8s are in the 10s.
Correct. And they also had a piece of the 7s in the 10s as well, which the reference to Medicaid, I believe, was cleared up.
Okay.
But not all.
But not all of the 7s, correct. The section 22 of the dash 7s are not in the 10s.
Okay.
So so with that, Cindy, we're in honor of the W's in our committee, we're continuing with the reverse alphabetical order on the dash 10 amendment to Senate Bill 973.
Representative Winger?
No.
Representative May?
Yes.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative Cowan?
Aye.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Vice Chair Widener?
Aye.
Vice Chair Riley?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Aye. Dash 10 amendments having received the required votes are adopted to Senate Bill 973A.
Mr. Chair?
I don't know.
Representative Widener.
I make a motion that we move the dash A11s as well.
Representative Widener, after the discussion with the constitutionality of the dash A11s, I'm not inclined to accept that motion.
I was trying to see the line.
Representative Cowan.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash 7 in light of the lesser constitutionality question.
Representative Cowan has moved the dash 7 amendments to Senate Bill 973A. Discussion.
Let's talk about what they do.
Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thank you also for indulging me with a little bit of extra time. Mr. Howard, a question. Just regarding the distinction between the council, in your analysis, the four words I see, of course, are on page 3, would be of 11 and 12, including a life and settlement, which seems fairly... in your testimony, you very effectively communicated your conclusion that... But could you help me out a little more with the analysis? It's unclear to me why the inclusion of those four words runs afoul of compelled speech rules.
Well,
I have real concerns about the constitutionality of, frankly, the Dash 7 as well.
Okay.
And if you could, I would really appreciate it if you could elucidate this for me.
Well, through the Chair, Chair Holby, Representative Barton,
The Dash 7s seem to me, without getting into the specifics of a competing competitor to life insurance, fall seems to me within the exception that runs throughout our code, having to do with the consumer protection, full disclosure of options to consumers that they otherwise wouldn't know about. And if, in my opinion, if the Dash 7s were found to be unconstitutional, there would be quite a few other sections of the Oregon Revised Statutes that would arguably also be unconstitutional. And therefore, I believe that they are acceptable and would stand past muster based upon the fact of there are other statutes. The Dash 12s, what's also the Dash 11s, when you get into a specific reference to a competitor in that situation, it seems to me that's when you get to a good analogy to the issue that was raised in the Pacific Gas and Electric case. And I believe that in that situation, you would find that there'd be a good chance that that portion of it would be ruled to be unconstitutional.
Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Follow up.
Going back to the A7s for a moment, you might have them in front of you. On page 3, there's subsection D, and it talks, conceitedly, it talks about what the document may include, not shall include, and I recognize that's a distinction, but let's assume that the A7s were passed. And let's assume that the document did, because we're here delegating it, include brief descriptions, common products. It seems to me that could easily reference life settlement. Just as, for example, the A11s and A12s do. Now, admittedly, then, the A7s, I guess, would not be facially unconstitutional. But depending on what the director included in the document, it could be unconstitutional as applied.
Yes, you are correct about that. Through the chair, Representative Barton, you're correct that the specific document came out from the Department of Consumer and Business Services that went over that line, that could be challenged as applied. You're correct. It would be up to the DCBS not to, to be aware of that situation and not go over that line.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Callan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate your coming and explaining one more piece of the law that I don't understand, and I have been struggling to. But I think it's important to note that, and to reinforce, I think, the full disclosure to consumers, to me, that is of equal importance, particularly things that they might not know. And to Representative Barton's point in on page 3 of the Dash 7s and item D, it just says brief descriptions. And if I'm understanding you correctly, there is nothing there that would compel them to include specific things like life settlements. It just says that we should broaden consumers' understanding of what is available to them, but nothing specific is compelled. So if I'm understanding what you said correctly about full disclosure to consumers of information they may not already know, The dash sevens would not breach that constitutionality issue and would, in fact, be something that's important for this committee to consider. Is that fair to say?
Without getting into policy issues, I believe, Representative Callan, through the chair, that it would not, it would fall within the allowed constitutionality of providing consumer information.
Thank you.
Representative Barton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I stated last time, I believe this was heard, that this is really, I've enjoyed this bill very much. It's been a really interesting bill, and it's a gift that just keeps giving. It just keeps getting more interesting. So I've really enjoyed this very much. I am uncomfortable, Mr. Chair, with the delegation in the A7 amendments. It does strike me that if the line is indeed, as Mr. Howard draws it, which is a pretty tight fit there with just those four words, render it unconstitutional. That delegation, if it is going to indeed include brief descriptions of common products and discussing them in general terms for informative purposes only, if those four words render it unconstitutional, it occurs to me that there's a very good chance that whatever the director did it, assuming the director availed herself of this delegation of authority, that it would also be unconstitutional. Cornyn, I don't think I'm sufficiently comfortable with the A7 amendments at this time to support them. If they were passed, I'd reconsider my support of the bill.
This from them about the A7.
Thank you.
Further discussion from the committee? Representative Riley.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to put on the record that we want, if we pass the A7s, that we want to be sure that the director is very careful the structuring of that statement. And I think that the legislative intent will help.
Notwithstanding that, Representative Barton.
Thank you. I appreciate Representative Riley's comments. I like to think that agencies always pay careful attention to legislative intent. However, I fear that that is not always the case. And as such, to the extent it is a significant issue of running afoul of the Constitution, I think it's inappropriate of this legislature to delegate that, unless it's far more narrow.
Other discussion on the, I guess we're speaking about the A7 amendments at this point. I'm going to, seeing none at this time, I'm going to stand at ease for a few minutes. think you would like to reconvene the House Committee on Consumer Protection. And committee, we have already adopted the Dash 10 amendments to 973A. We have a motion before us on the Dash 7 amendments to Senate Bill 973A. And seeing no further discussion on the amendment, Cindy, could we have a roll call vote, please, in reverse alphabetical order?
Thank you.
You've been doing that all year long.
You're coming to expect this now, Mr. Chair.
Not for long.
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative Cowan?
Aye.
Representative Barton?
No.
Vice Chair Widener?
Aye.
Vice Chair Riley?
Aye.
Chair Holmes?
I think I lost that one.
No. With that, the amendments to the A7 amendments have been adopted to Senate Bill 973.
Unbelievable.
And Representative Riley.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 973A to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Riley moves Senate Bill 973A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Do I dare?
One comment.
Representative Krieger.
You've got more yeses starting over there than when you started the other way.
I'll keep that for future reference. Representative Widener.
With the adoption of both of these, are we helping the insurance companies? Are we hurting the insurance companies with this bill now?
No. I don't know that.
The answer is no.
I'm prepared to answer that.
That's not the way we approach this.
It was just a question. It didn't have anything.
Just a question.
Any other discussion?
Yeah. Check that. Yeah.
Representative Barton?
Yeah. Mr. Chair, thoroughly lost my last argument. I'm prepared to support this bill. I beg and plead DCBS to tread this delegation, use it wisely.
Thank you
very confident
that
DCBS will do that.
I'm sure they will do everything in their power to abide by the Constitution. Representative Winger, comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to be a no vote on this bill. I am concerned that I guess I haven't had the problem outlined for me yet. We seem to have an issue, not with people who already have life insurance policies and choose to sell them to life settlement companies, but people who maybe later in life would choose to get a life insurance policy and then sell it to a life settlement company, which may provide some income for them. And I am extremely uncomfortable in taking that option away from them, especially in light of, I mean, this bill has forced me to learn a little bit more, or a lot more, about this whole issue. And I did distribute a Wall Street Journal article about COLEs and BOLEs, something that was brought up to me at the last hearing on this. COLEs are company-owned life insurance policies, and BOLEs are bank-owned life insurance policies. And it turns out that there are billions of dollars worth of these taken out by these companies all the time on their employees. Companies like AIG and Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and Kimberly Clark and Tyson Foods. Banks, although companies don't always report these, so we don't know how many they have, banks do have to report them and have a total of $122.3 billion in life insurance on employees, which they collect when the employee dies, oftentimes long after the employee is gone. Okay, J.P. Morgan has $12 billion in these. Citigroup has $14.2 billion in these. Bank of America has $17.1 billion in these life insurance policies. I don't understand why they should be able to have that. And some older person in Oregon who would like to get a life insurance policy and sell it to a life settlement company and receive some money up front for that transaction, that we're going to prohibit that. This seems to be quite a large and lucrative business that a lot of other people are capitalizing on, and I just don't understand why we'd take this option away from perhaps low-income people out there who maybe don't have a lot saved up, and they can create a life insurance policy and sell it and get some money in their old age. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Other discussion?
I appreciate your comments, Representative Wingert. I, you know, think that this bill doesn't necessarily take away the person's ability to sell their life insurance policy. It does, however, restrict who can take out those life insurance policies. So with that, Cindy, can we have a roll call vote in reverse alphabetical order?
Did we move the underlying bill?
Yeah.
We're going to right now.
We're
voting on Senate Bill 973 as amended. 973A as amended.
Representative Wingert?
No.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Gilliam?
Aye.
Representative Cowan?
Aye.
Representative Barton?
Aye.
Vice Chair Widener?
Aye.
Vice Chair Riley?
Aye.
Chair Holby?
Aye. Senate Bill 973A, having received the required votes, is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Carrier, Representative Barton, you seem very enthusiastic. Thank you very much for your offering. So with that, I will close the work session on Senate Bill 973A.
I remember you were fascinated by this.
Yes, I want to have two glasses of wine tonight.
Committee, I believe that completes our agenda for today and our bills for this session. I want to thank the committee members for their participation and attention to these issues. I know some of them have not been the easiest to decide upon and move forward, and I know that we all try to do what we think is best for the state of Oregon, so I appreciate your efforts and appreciate and respect your opinions on all the bills that we have voted for and against, and with that, I want to also thank Cindy, our committee assistant, and Victoria, our committee administrator, both doing an excellent job for this committee and helping keep the committee on track, as well as myself. Appreciate my vice chairs and their participation and everybody else. So with that, I will adjourn the House Committee on Consumer Protection.